All right, what was the pitch in the last inning?
You know, bro, home run pitch.
Welcome in to another episode of the Home Run Pitch Podcast. Tyler Danberg alongside Nathan Rosenhouse with you. And Nate, pitchers and catchers have long gone reported. Spring training has been underway. And you know what? It is so good to have fans in the stands. And albeit it's tough to really talk about the opening stages of spring training and really break it down, but it's just good to have that normal baseball type feel back in March.
Yes, it is. It's been a long time since we've had fans in the stands at a baseball game that really felt like a baseball game. It's actually been probably about a year to today, maybe. I don't know. Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And you know the guys have been just waiting for this. They feed off the energy, and to not have that for a year, a lot of them, you heard them talk about how much it hurt their play. So, yeah, it's just good to have baseball back, ready to go, even if it is just spring training. But, you know, it's back. It's baseball season now.
Right. That's what it's all about, honestly, Nathan. When you take a look at it, and I know the guys are going to say we're just pure competitors. So that's, you know, having no fans in the stands isn't going to play much of a big deal. But those were the same people that had really bad seasons last year. So I think when you look at it all under the same umbrella, everybody's going to conclude, like you said, having at least some people there is going to play a pivotal factor, not only on individual play, but just the entire team.
Yes. You get the team feeding off the fans more so, I think, than just the individual guys. You get a couple dudes on base, crowd stands up in the ninth inning, gets you going, gets that guy up in the box, ready to go hit a home run, set the stadium into a frenzy. It really just, it can take your team from just a low energy level and really bring them up like that, like super fast. So it's just good to have people back in the stands. It's baseball season. And we actually have a lot to go over as far as transactions goes since the last episode. So let's get right into it. Kind of a minor move to start off. Oakland has traded Chris Davis and Jonathan Heim and Dane Acker to Texas for Elvis Andrews, Aramis Garcia, and Cash. Tyler, what are your thoughts about this trade right out of the gate?
Well, there's one blatant, clear way to digest this trade. Basically, the headliners in this deal, Chris Davis and Elvis Andrews.
Yep.
These are guys that have been staples in their respective cities. Now, Davis did spend a couple of seasons in Milwaukee, but he's really made his bones in Oakland. The power numbers since he's been an A since 2016 have been ridiculous, but these are polar opposites. Elvis Andrews, he's a sweet swinging, high contact, high average OBP shortstop. And Chris Davis is a high slug, low average. But
well, he's always going to hit 247.
Yes, he's always, isn't it like he's got like 4 or 5 years straight, right, of just batting 247?
Yeah, I don't think he had it last year, but that doesn't count. It was a COVID year.
Yeah, we're not going to count that.
Yeah, but I think he had 3 or 4 years straight of hitting 247 when the season ended.
Yeah, and one thing that does stick out is that he hit those 48 home runs in 2018. So that's going to be one positive that comes out of it. But I think my personal thoughts, though, Nate, I probably like the haul for Texas.
Yep.
Because I think that Chris Davis, and although he's going to be 33, I think Elvis is up there as well. But I think that Davis, he can always have those high slugging averages. I like the slugging percentage in his favor. Works really well because you look at the past couple of years, he's been in the market at least above 500 besides last year, it seems like. So I think that the Rangers, they need a slugger. They just need a slugger. And having Elvis Andrews there, he saw Texas's best days.
Yep. And it also gives them someone to either protect Joey Gallo with or have protected by Joey Gallo in that lineup. You can slot Davis in the 3 or the 5 slot, or the fourth slot, whatever, right around Joey Gallo, and that could do wonders for him.
I was saying that the Rangers should have held on or try to just sign a minor league friendly deal to Derek Dietrich for the same purpose that Chris Davis has. But now that Davis is there, you might as well trade for him and get him and slide him in there. So I think that the Rangers have the ability to be pretty strategic about this.
Yes. Next up on the docket, Sean Doolittle to Cincinnati on a 1-year, $1.5 million contract. He's also got $2.1 million in performance bonuses. Tyler, who is our NBA comparison for Sean Doolittle?
It's Golden State Warriors legend Harrison Barnes. I think that these two guys kind of go hand in hand. Yes, they're old, kind of. And Harrison Barnes, he's a little out there as well. Love the do, but Sean Doolittle is a little bit, you know, out of proportion at times. So he brings a different perspective per se. But again, Sean Doolittle's a guy that he can get the job done. One thing that these guys both share is that they've won a title. So that's another thing that they kind of go hand in hand with. But I think that Doolittle's reliable and he's going to pack that extra protection that Cincinnati is going to need, because you can do a lot with Doolittle because you don't have to immediately include the likes of a guy like Raisel Iglesias, because you look at Raisel Iglesias and the fact that he's not there anymore. So this fills a big void that the Reds need to fill in their bullpen, because Iglesias is now an Angel.
Yeah, no, nothing against Michael Lorenzen, but I think if he's your closer, Cincinnati fans might have rioted. That would not have been a pretty sight.
Agreed, and that's no knock to Lorenzen, because
great pitcher, absolute stud. He's built like a bodybuilder.
Oh my God. He's an Adonis.
Yeah, but that's going to do wonders for their bullpen. Obviously not a shutdown all-star level reliever, but solid to get the job done. Just someone you'd love to have in the back end of your bullpen. Next up, we have Colton Wong to the Milwaukee Brewers on a 2-year, $18 million contract. Tyler, who's our NBA comparison?
Now, it might not seem fair to compare a little guy in Wong with a big guy like Jonas Valanciunas, but I think that, again, when you look at it, Jonas Valanciunas, he was a very highly touted prospect. Foreign guy from Lithuania. Colton Wong, he's from Hawaii. So, I mean, that's pretty foreign, because you don't have too many guys from Hawaii.
No, you don't. You've got the bigs. Shane Victorino is the first one that comes to mind. The flying Hawaiian.
Flying Hawaiian. Also, Keston Hira.
Yep.
So another very good Hawaiian baseball player. So that's one thing that they share. But Colton Wong is a guy, he's going to be reliable. His offensive skills are not as great as his defense. His glove is wonderful. And I think that's another thing, because Valanciunas, guy can't shoot to save his life, but he can play strong defense on the interior. Same thing with Colton Wong. He can dazzle on the infield. And I think that where the battles are won in this scenario in the interior, these are two guys that are perfectly fit to go in comparison with each other.
Yes. Now we're going to head over to Texas again. Mike Foltynewicz is going to head to Texas Rangers on a 1-year, $2 million contract. Our NBA comparison is Taj Gibson. Tyler, why is that?
Well, Taj Gibson is a guy, he's a big guy, but he shot threes and he made threes. He was a sharp shooting big man and couldn't do anything outside of it. Something that Folty does, he's another big guy. He's 6'4", 6'5", but he dominates in some of those uncharacteristic stat categories, I guess you could say. Dude can throw complete games. He's led the league in complete games on multiple occasions. He can eat up a lot of innings, and I think that's another important thing. Last year was kind of different because he only appeared in one game with Atlanta, but I think that Taj Gibson is the perfect guy. Not only is that kind of just a meme comparison, but, well, speaking of meme comparisons, we're going to have another meme coming up for the next acquisition, but not to tease there. But I think that when you think of Fulte, you think, you know, nothing flashy, even though he's been able to put up some strong numbers, an all-star appearance to go with his record. Taj Gibson also has an all-star appearance, but you don't really think about Taj Gibson or you don't really think about Mike Foltynewicz when you look at guys that can light it up at times. Taj Gibson, light it up from deep. Folty can light it up from the mound. So I think that we probably dug deep to find this comparison, but I think if you think of Taj Gibson, you might think of Mike Foltynewicz.
Next up is every Pirates fan's favorite player, Chris Archer, going to Tampa Bay on a one-year, $6.5 million contract. Tyler, who's our NBA comparison?
It'd be Joakim Noah. I think when you think of one-year one, I think that one-year wonder is loose to describe both these guys because Joakim did have multiple NBA honors to go to his name, but Chris Archer does have two All-Star appearances, except he just had a really good first half in that 2017 year. But 2015 was just ridiculous stuff by Chris Archer. And although he lost more games than he won, he started in almost like every game. He had a really good ERA, the best of his career. So I think Chris Archer and Joakim Noah, perfect comparison. And that was yours, I believe, Nathan, because Joakim Noah had that big 1 year, had gotten another deal as a result of it, thinking that the Knicks, for example, the Knicks and the Pirates are the analogy here. The Knicks, a couple years removed from Joakim's Defensive Player of the Year, that was when they said, oh, we can try and squeeze out enough and see if we can bring back the Joakim Noah of a couple of years ago. That's exactly what the Pirates did in 2018 when they acquired him about midway through the season when they traded for him. They just said, hey, what if we can bring back the Chris Archer we saw in 15 and 17 and maybe think that could be how it goes. And he didn't pitch last year, but 2019 was abysmal for Archer. So I think that the glory days might be beyond him, but the Rays, they're just trying to bring him back. Friendly deal.
Next up to the Cleveland Indians, Eddie Rosario on a one-year, $8 million contract. Every Indians fan is happy about this one. And if not because we have him, but that because we're not going to have to play against him 18 times a season. Who's your NBA comparison?
Jamal Murray. Of the Denver Nuggets, because these two guys, although you might not think about it, they share one common trait, and that is score. Jamal Murray, guy that people don't realize, has led the league in scoring at least in the top five or the top 10 of the past couple of years straight. Same thing with Eddie Rosario. You look at the past two seasons, you look at 2019 and 2020, Eddie Rosario is fourth in all of Major League Baseball in runs batted in. So I think your answer is simple and clear cut. They can score.
Yep. And after a offseason for the Chicago Cubs, some Cubs fans weren't really sure the direction the team was going. They went out, they lost Schwarber. All the Cubs fans weren't happy about that. But right away, they went out and replaced him with Jock Peterson on a one-year, $7.75 million contract.
I think this is an upgrade because Peterson can play a lot better defense than Kyle Schwarber, and universal DH or no DH in the NL. Jock Peterson's definitely an upgrade, and you just sign him to a year. See how that goes. I think that adding a name like him is probably just something to also give the Cubs fans – a little bit to cheer about because this has not been a friendly offseason. Joe Harris would be the comparison. And we were talking about this before we were initially supposed to do our show on Tuesday. We're now recording this on a Saturday. But Joe Harris is the perfect guy because, first off, they can make big splashes with big scoring plays. Jock Peterson hits home runs. That's probably his best trait. You've seen him go toe-to-toe with, you know, Vladdy Jr. That one of the best home run derby, at least in recent history, one of the best home run derby matchups, and then Joe Harris shoots the three ball well. The guy can't really do anything outside of it, but he can hit the three. So I think Jock Peterson, he doesn't have the biggest name to it, and obviously so, because when you're in an outfield with Cody Bellinger and Mookie Betts, that's what's going to be the case, as is for Joe Harris. You're not going to get the same guts and glamour in being in the same backcourt as guys like James Harden and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Being in the middle of that, like, that's exactly what the case is. So maybe even compare him to future Joe Harris when Harris leaves Brooklyn. That could be the comparison for Jock Peterson.
Now we're going to swing to the West Coast, the San Francisco Giants. After missing out on Bryce Harper, after missing out on Bauer, I know there was some talk about them early on in his free agency, they settled with Tommy La Stella on a 3-year, $18.75 million contract. Tyler, who's the NBA comparison?
TJ McConnell of the Indiana Pacers. These are two guys. They're West Coast dudes. They've been out there as well for a little bit, besides McConnell playing in Indianapolis. I think there's a clear-cut answer with that. But nonetheless, McConnell and La Stella, they're both little guys, small but mighty. They've got power. They've got speed. And they're just five-tool guys. Tommy La Stella, people don't realize that, first off, he can hit the crap out of the ball, but he also just hits straight line drives. Then you transition to his defense, absolute machine defensively. And the same goes for TJ McConnell. He just had a triple-double off of points, assists, and steals literally three, 4 days ago from when we were recording this. So I mean, that was perfect time that they're underrated, they're undersized, but they're overwhelming to an opponent.
Yes, and big deal here for all the Twins fans. I know there was some talk, would he go to the NL? Is he going to stay in the AL? What's going to happen with Nelson Cruz? He ages like fine wine, and he's going to re-sign with the Minnesota Twins on a 1-year, $13 million contract. We went with Carmelo Anthony for the NBA comparison. Tyler, why is that?
I think, first off, it's because Nelson Cruz and Carmelo Anthony in their two respective sports, I think that every sports fan, either in baseball or in basketball, have fantasized about a trade or a signing for Nelson Cruz and Carmelo Anthony. I think they have been in this so-called trade talk bubble for about every single team. So there's a shared comparison right off the bat. Second of all, these are guys that, as their careers have gone on, they have really just taken off. And I think, too, they also share a setback as well. Nelly had his substance abuse suspensions a couple of years back. He had some complications in Seattle. Carmelo Anthony had that little window of getting signed by a team and getting released the next day, and where they were just kind of back and forth and hopping their teams and going all around. And then Carmelo Anthony stops him on the Trailblazers and has found a 3-year, maybe even 4-year home. Same thing with Nelson Cruz. He's been stuck in Minnesota, and it seems like he's only staying that way, putting up reliable numbers as both Cruz and Melo go further in their careers.
Yes, and now we are down to the last three notable transactions since the last episode. Marcell Ozuna back to the Braves on a 4-year, $65 million contract. Tyler, who's the NBA comparison?
So Marcell Ozuna is a guy you can go pretty much anyway. I think that the guy to describe him, though, is Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics, a guy who's going to really wreak havoc. I think Ozuna is just super powerful, a guy who has and will probably continue to lead his respective lead in home runs and in almost any other power statistical category. And I think this goes beyond stats, because Jaylen Brown also plays a dramatic impact just on the Celtics in general as a team. The same goes for Marcell Ozuna. And Ozuna is kind of that 2-3-4 guy in that Braves lineup. Same goes for Jaylen Brown, albeit you go from nine guys to five, but Jaylen Brown's being around Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum and obviously the GOAT, Aaron Baines. But I think when it comes down to it, these are guys that some might look as underappreciated or overlooked or just absolute beasts. And I think that Brown is consistent and Ozuna has started to become steady as a rock at one point in his career, especially in Miami. He started that St. Louis tenure. He was not that consistent. And now he's starting to really build that up.
Yes. Next up, the most recent transaction, Jake Odorizzi to Houston. Who's our NBA comparison?
I think that Jake Odorizzi is he's a weird guy to compare it to, because there aren't too many guys that follow the Jake Odorizzi criteria. Here's the criteria for a comparison: multiple average seasons, then one breakout season, and then an injury to follow it immediately. And that is Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon had that big Rookie of the Year campaign, had an injury right after, and then had some average seasons to follow it, but he was never the same. Still hasn't really been the same. I think he's in with the Pacers right now, but he was with the Bucks. But anyways, Odorizzi, the poor guy, couldn't catch a break. He'd been highly touted, was really strong with the Rays at times, and then had been really filtering off. But then when he went to the Twins, it seemed like fate. He went 15-7 and won most of those. He was the best pitcher in the first half of the 2019 season in all of the American League, in my opinion at least. Dude was absolutely dominant. Then immediately after, he gets injured. Then gets injured again in 2020. The guy just has not been able to catch a break, and so hasn't Malcolm Brogdon.
Next is going to be Jackie Bradley Jr. to Milwaukee on a two-year, $24 million contract. Our NBA comparison is going to be Brook Lopez. Why is that, Tyler?
Because Brook Lopez is one of the streakiest guys out there, and the same goes for Jackie Bradley Jr. Brook Lopez will be the NBA Player of the Month in November and then won't do anything since. Jackie Bradley Jr. is a monster in May. The second month of the season, he's an absolute boss. I can't believe I'm using the term boss, but the dude dominates in the second and third months of the season, maybe even fourth. But then he'll go probably 300 plus during that span, and then it will be a struggle to even get over the Mendoza line for the surrounding months after.
Last transaction, the biggest domino to fall, setting an MLB record for annual value. Trevor Bauer signs with the Los Angeles Dodgers on a three-year, $125 million contract, and he's got an opt-out after this first and second year of the deal, $45 million the first year, $45 million the second year, and $40 million in year three. Bradley Beal is our NBA comparison. They've always been good players. In the past season or two, they've both really stepped it up and become great players. Bauer's in line. He just got that huge deal in the next couple of years, and Beal becomes a free agent. He's also going to be in line for that big max contract.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Just absolutely huge. Trevor Bauer, that deal is ridiculous. And hands down, a great job by his team with Rachel Luba, his agent, spearheading that. I think Bradley Beal is going to be next up. He's going to get paid wherever the heck that's going to be, because we know that he's kind of unhappy and the Wizards don't really fit his needs, but this is a baseball podcast. Trevor Bauer, I think, is a perfect comparison for Bradley Beal. You hit the nail on the head with it, Nate. Guys that just, they earn their payday with going above and beyond. And Trevor Bauer has, as of last year, gone above and beyond. Also, they're good marketers. Now, Trevor Bauer is an intentional marketer. Bradley Beal is an unintentional marketer, because he always attracts social media attention for how good he is, but then he gets so tired, he reacts weirdly. There have been memes of him laying out at the scores table after a game, but people feel bad for him. People are like, he's going to get paid next. We feel really bad for him. Now, Trevor Bauer with his momentum company and everything that goes around, he's just unbelievable mind. Brilliant guy. And he's a tour de force on the mound. but he's making headlines for what he does online and what he does off the field because he attracts attention. He's going to be probably the first of many guys to start really doing that. And so there is a little bit of a difference between intentional and unintentional, but these guys can market.
Yes, and that is going to do it for the transaction part of our show. Now we're going to take on a little bit of a different swing today. Pecota, a computer program, I guess, done by Baseball Prospectus every year with whatever formula they've got. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. They go down and predict the records for each team in MLB before spring training starts. We're going to take you division by division each week. Starting today with the NL East, Pecota predicts the New York Mets to win this division with a 96-66 record, followed by the Washington Nationals at 85-77, Philadelphia Phillies at 83-79, with the Atlanta Braves fourth at 82-80, and in fifth, last, the Miami Marlins with a 68-94 record. I'm a little torn on this because I think I don't see how the Braves are that much worse than they are last year. The bullpen's still a question mark. But you brought back Ozuna. You got Charlie Morton to bolster the first half of that rotation. I don't think they're worse than they are last year. They might lose a couple more games than usual just because of the Mets got a little bit better and the Marlins are a goodish team now. And I'm also not really sold on the Mets yet. I think they're a very, very good team, but I think it's a little early to start saying, oh, 96 wins. Pump the brakes on that. Give it a little bit of time.
I agree. So first off, the way we're going to be approaching these division breakdowns is that we're just going to get our first impressions and just talk about the division itself. With the NL East, we'll start with them, and then we'll break down kind of their lineups as well. We'll take a look at these lineup projections according to our friends at rotochamp.com. But I think let's start off with the Braves, Nathan, when we're just talking overall as a whole. I agree. I think they're a team that can win 87, 88, 89 games. They've got at least three 10-game winners right then and there. Look at Max Fried, as long as he's healthy because he's been nursing that injury. And there's Charlie Morton, like you mentioned, and then Ian Anderson, another guy who is a stud and has already proven himself to be pretty potent. And I think he's just going to continue getting better. But I like the Braves. I agree with you. I think they're not really worse than what they are last year. And what they were last year was a strong, pivotal playoff team.
But I know people like to hate on the Phillies because of Bryce Harper or whatever. But if we're being honest, last year, they were a playoff team until the last month of the season, until the bullpen really just completely faltered. However, I don't think they're better than Atlanta. That week's yet to be seen. Aaron Nola could come out and have a great year. Harper could keep being Harper. El Muto could be great. And they could surprise me. They could come out and win the 83, 85 games. But I don't think they're better than Atlanta.
I agree with you. I might not even think that they're better than Washington. I do like, though, the fact that they used last year probably better than most teams did. They used it as a building block. They used it as, I mean, last year in 2020, 60 game sprint, perfect time for a rebuilding year. They brought up Alec Boehm in what would have been a normal year. It would have been prematurely. And Boehm dominated. He put on an absolute showcase. And I think he's only getting better from there. So you look at him, I think Harper can probably have another MVP caliber season because it seems like he's starting to get more comfortable. So they're starting to get their lineup figured out, at least their top lineup. It might be a little interesting to take a look at their bench when we take a look at their bench. But then I think their starting pitching, though, could be a little bit of an issue. Outside of Nola and Wheeler, are you really going to rely on Zach Eflin and guys like Vince Velasquez to really carry you? I don't know if that's going to be the case. I see the Phillies being a team that needs to shop. They need to shop for an arm. I think they are a start. They are a dominant starting pitcher away from being a pivotal playoff team. But right now, I don't see them getting above it, and albeit a really tight race, I project in the NL East. But I don't see
this
them
is probably getting, the strongest division in baseball.
Probably you can, and they always have been for some reason. Like look at the past couple of years, they've been really, really strong. But I think that it's going to be tough for the Phils to crack the top two.
I agree. And I think they did the Marlins a little bit of a disservice. 68 wins. Oh, that seems really low for that team.
100%. Hey, they won a playoff series, Nate.
Oh, I know. Actually, you predicted their playoff appearance before the season even started last year. You told me we were hitting a Bulkin Park in Fairview.
That's
and
right.
You said this was in March, and you were like, Nathan, the Marlins are going to make the playoffs. And you know what? I laughed at you. I laughed at that because I didn't see any way the Miami Marlins make the playoffs. But you know what? Sixto Sanchez, one of my favorite young pitchers in the game, absolutely dealed all season. They had some good offense. But I don't see how they're a 68-win team. I think they're in the mid-70s.
I think Sixto is an absolute star. Now, I got a question for you about the Marlins.
What's that?
To quote from the B-movie, you like jazz? I think Jazz Chisholm is going to be the real deal this year. He's already put on a little bit of a display in spring training, but all that can kind of go out the tubes. I think he makes the opening day roster, and I think probably by May or June, he can probably crack the starting shortstop position. It'll be tough because you got Miguel Rojas out there. You got other all-around guys like Brian Anderson and Isan Diaz, but I think that Jazz could be the guy kind of helping spearhead that Miami infield come midway or a little bit before midway before the season is over.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to agree with you there. I got to be honest. I have no clue what you said. Once you started talking about the B-movie, you got me laughing. I cannot focus. So that's going to do it.
Great movie.
It is a good movie. That's going to do it for the NL East prediction. Next week, we're going to be hitting you with the NL Central. To finish off today's podcast, it is time for the next three rounds of the Home Run Pitch Podcast Flashback Draft. Let me give you a quick recap on how this is going to work. So we're going to go down the line, pick a catcher down each position, three starting pitchers, one reliever, and one closer. And then from there, you pick one season that player has played. And that stats from that season is how he would produce for the rest of eternity. The world could blow up and they're still going to be playing that way on the one field that still exists on planet Earth. So little recap, Tyler's team, we're running with 2012 Buster Posey, 2010 Joey Votto, 2012 Robbie Cano, 2013 Miggy Cabrera, 2011 Troy Tulowitzki, and 2012 Ryan Braun. I am working with Yadier Molina from 2013, 2015 Goldie, 2016, Daniel Murphy, 2019, Alex Bregman, 2018, Francisco Lindor, 2015, Yoenis Cespedes. Today, we're going to be going center field, right field, and your first starting pitcher. I am first on the docket. This is an easy pick for me, 2019 Mike Trout. I think that's the best season we've seen him have, over 40-plus home runs, good average, still good in the field as usual. I think that's a no-brainer. Tyler, who's your center fielder?
Well, first off, I love the Trout pick. I mean, that's clear cut. Second of all, just want to address the rules. We cannot have, and we talked about this before, we cannot have the same guy, even though they're in different years. So I cannot take another Mike Trout. I think that was kind of the consensus. I've been making my rounds kind of living outside of the box. So I'm going to go with a little bit more of an unconventional pick. This is a hidden gem year. I just want to refresh because I had told you about him and we were talking about it, but people forget. Name the guy. Slash line, 321, 376, 552, and OPS 928. 32 dingers and 105 RBIs. It's 2011 Red Sox legend than his second in the MVP voting, Jacoby Ellsbury.
All right, I like that. Not Mike Trout, but he's all right, I guess.
Yeah, that Mike Trout guy. I heard he's pretty
just
good,
okay.
You know.
All right, you have the first pick for right fielders, Tyler. Who you got?
Okay, so I gave this one a lot of thought, actually, probably like the first week of the draft, and this one's tough to digest and take a look at, but I think that this is probably the one I was leaning towards, and it's 2018 Mookie Betts. Dude won a championship, was the batting champion and slugging champion. His batting average was 346. 640 slug, and he mashed over 30 homers. His RBIs were down, but that's because he was just getting on base because he was hitting leadoff in most of those scenarios, so it's tough to get RBIs in that case. Dude mashed, and he also won a gold glove.
All right, solid pick. I am going to have to go with Aaron Judge from 2017. You kind of get the feeling that if he could do that every year, the Yankees might have won a World Series since he's been up.
Oh, I agree. I think that before the Yankees were starting to really get back in the market and just start dominating again, I think that Aaron Judge was going to be the franchise. And I see that because that was probably, would you agree, like 2016-17 – when the Yankees were just trying to get back in the playoff race, but that was before they really started loading up on free agents. So I think that Aaron Judge was like that homegrown guy that the Yankees had not had in a while that can really tear it up. And dude's just a freak of nature. And that 2017 year is a great exemplification of that.
Yeah. I really do feel that him having all the injury problems has been one of the main reasons the Yankees have underperformed in the playoffs. And that is going to take me to – I have the first pick for starting pitchers. Call me a homer. Call it a COVID season. I'm going with Shane Bieber from 2020.
Great pick because, first off, Triple Crown winner. I don't even want to do the math. But I know you can do your you can run down the stats, but only thing I want to say is that I can't imagine what those stats would be like if you put him in a 162 game scenario.
Yeah, so he had 77 innings pitched, 122 strikeouts, and he what else are we looking at here? So we had the strikeouts, innings pitched, and he went 8-1. Huge for the Indians in a year where you had some key pieces struggle to help them offensively. And that was one of the main reasons they were able to get the playoffs. Say what you want about the playoffs. Yeah, it was one rough game, but it's exactly that. It was one rough game. I really am set on Shane Bieber. There was a couple other guys I was thinking about, but every time I kept thinking to myself, does that beat Shane Bieber's 2020? And every time I couldn't say that.
So I guess that's a perfect segue because one of the guys that you were thinking about was the guy that I'm going to take. It's 2011, same year as Jacoby Ellsbury dominated in Boston. In center, Justin Verlander was lethal on the mound. He went 24-5. He had a 2.40 ERA, 251 innings pitched. This guy ate up frames, and then he struck out 250 batters. Won the Cy Young, won the MVP. I believe that is what the kids would call, just like Mr. Bieber himself, that would be the pitching triple crown. So another thing to take a look at there. But again, here's one thing that I'd probably put Bieber over, though, Nathan, is that he had the Major League Baseball triple crown. Justin Verlander's 2.40 ERA, if there's one thing Biebs has, is that Verlander only led the American League in ERA. He did lead all of baseball in wins and strikeouts, but Bieber does have a little bit more of those props. I think it's tough because it's hard to balance the 60 games and 162 games because, you know, over 100 games separate the two. But Verlander was nothing short of dominant. And I think that's probably you could oblige as well. The best season that he had and he has had in his 16, maybe if he comes back in that 17-year career in 2022, but absolute Hall of Fame type numbers from both these pitchers in our drafts.
Yes, and then next week for the draft, we are going to be hitting the last two starting rotation spots and your reliever. So stay tuned to see. You know what? We're actually going to finish the draft next week. We have four picks left, so we're going to knock off the two starting pitchers and get our two relievers. And we're going to leave it up to you guys, our loyal listeners, to decide who had the best draft. And before we end it, we have a few notable listeners who were all torn up that a couple episodes ago, we forgot to tell you guys our NBA comparison for Joe Musgrove. And we want to apologize from the bottom of our hearts for forgetting to give your NBA comparison because you wanted to know. Tyler, who's the comparison that we forgot?
Not Marvin Bagley Sr., it's Marvin Bagley Jr. Or wait, no, is he Marvin Bagley III?
I don't know.
Well, these are the hard-hitting questions that I think we need to be asked. It is Marvin Bagley III. So it's not Marvin Bagley II, it's Marvin Bagley III. I think Joe Musgrove is a guy, he's had a couple years of proving himself, was a high pick. So is Marvin Bagley, maybe a little bit too high. But again, these are guys that they're going to stay staples. They're going to stay in the middle of some type of lineup or rotation in Musgrove's case. And I think it's kind of that if you acquire one of the two, Nathan, it's low risk and high reward.
Yes, it is. And a little bit of a shorter episode today, but that's going to conclude the podcast, episode 3 of the Home Run Pitch Podcast. This is Nathan Rosenhaus, along with Tyler Danberg, signing off. Thank you for listening to the Home Run Pitch Podcast. Six.